It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus. Hello and welcome to Millions of Screens. I'm creative producer Leo Garcia, joined via Zoom by TV Awards editor Libby Hill and TV deputy editor Ben Travers. Today we're going to be talking about some spoiler talk on Mayor of Easttown, episode 3, because I'll be doing my murder rankings. We'll be delving into Handmaid's Tale season 4, which launched last week. And then we'll talk some casting news and some series news that hit the wire this past week regarding some of our favorite people and some of our favorite shows. Would you say that's all true?
I'd say that's all true. I mean, it's the only good show on television is what we're, you know, going to be talking about. So you can always, you know, reference that. And then I think when you talk about your murder rankings, I don't think you need any lead-in, any preface, any like surrounding material.
No spoiler.
Just say murder rankings coming up on Millions of Screens.
This is the millions and millions of little screens.
Can't you shut up? I'm busy. Boy, what a great show.
Skipping ahead to the clicker, our recap of the biggest news items from this past week. As Ben teased in the open, we're talking about some casting news for the only good show on television, as our esteemed Libby Hill once named it. Succession announced that Alexander Skarsgård will be joining the cast for season 3. What did you guys think of this news? Are you? I'm assuming you're as excited as I am about it.
Alexander Skarsgård is not my favorite actor, and I never would have thought of him to appear in Succession, but the second I read it, I was like, oh yes, of course, that's going to be amazing. Just because he has the kind of wild card energy that I think would play very well in the Roy's universe, he's smarmy, and he has so many layers of villain, I think, is the thing. He was so good in the Showtime series that was unfairly canceled after one season that I can never remember the name of, but I know Ben knows.
On Becoming a God in Central Florida?
Yes, thank you.
Leo knows.
Leo knows. The Rube knows. Putting us all to shame. But, you know, and then, of course, in Big Little Lies and things like that, he just has such great energy, and I'm really interested to see how he's going to mix it up.
Well, they did give his name. His name is going to be Lucas Mattson, and he is a successful confrontational tech founder and CEO. Other than that, they only confirmed that he would be a recurring guest star, so, you know, more than one episode, but who knows.
So along the lines of like Holly Hunter and
yeah, I think so, probably. Though the timing of this also makes me think maybe it's less than Holly. But I don't know. I guess with Holly in mind, it makes a little more sense. But I was a little surprised to see them go with such a big name for a season 3 like this. But I'm also completely in agreement with Libby. Like, he's not necessarily an actor where I'm like, oh man, I gotta see this now. But he makes such interesting choices most of the time. This is a guy whose IMDb photo is him in his underpants. Like, the upstairs is a tuxedo and the downstairs is just nothing but stockings. And it's the guy who, like you said, in On Becoming a God, like, he's this really kind of lovable / horrible goofball sucker. And he leaned so far into that, so hard, so fast, that it was nothing but endearing. And I want to see him kind of bring that energy with a level of menace to Succession. And it'll be great. I mean, we're absolutely at the point where we cannot question Succession decisions. So
much less casting decisions.
We have no choice. Right. We have no choice but to be excited.
I'm just excited to see Skarsgård, who I know most from True Blood, or first from True Blood, have to act opposite Jeremy Strong, because those are two very different acting styles.
Yeah, this was far more exciting news than I was anticipating. Of course, maybe I'm just starving for Succession content.
Yeah, I think we all want Succession back. We all want it back in any form. And adding someone like Alexander Skarsgård is just making us froth at the mouths.
I would just say, if I had a legitimate reason I would use it, I don't, so I'll just be blatant. Everyone should watch The Little Drummer Girl with Alexander Skarsgård as well. It's an AMC drama. It's very, very good. It also has Florence Pugh. I wish I could say that this would like inform his character in Succession or give you proper context for what he's going to be bringing to the table, but I cannot. It's just a very good show that I don't feel like a lot of people watched.
I feel like yeah, if there's ever going to be an opportunity to pimp like more minor or more overlooked Skarsgård projects, then this is the perfect time to do it. We have plenty of time before Succession season 3 comes out. So
I just hope that this means if he's a tech CEO, it means more Valter, more jokes about
I can't handle it.
About tech news companies. I hope no. They brought Cord back to consult on what Gawker was like.
Good news for you, Leo. It's going to be all about the pivot to video.
Yeah. Can't wait. Well, moving on to other Warner news. It was announced also this week that HBO Max greenlit a series from David E. Kelley, also Big Little Lies links, obviously. And it'll be directed by multi-DGA award winner and favorite of the podcast, Leslie Linkett Glatter, starring WandaVision and Sorry for Your Losses, Elizabeth Olsen, in a leading role as an ex-murderer in a show we all question the title of, called Love and Death.
I feel like that's a title that could really, like, almost any show could just use it. They could just be like, listen, that's what it's going to be about. Like, we'll touch on love and we'll touch on death. It's very big picture. Just go with us. It means, like, something.
Legitimately every Shakespeare tragedy.
Libby, you mentioned this in the Slack, but it is based on a collection of articles from Texas Monthly. And those articles are collectively called Love and Death in Silicon Prairie, Part 1 and Part 2. So that's where they took the title of the show from.
Which is honestly just a great reason to talk about Halt and Catch Fire. Which
let's agree, do it.
Another AMC show.
No.
Man, HBO's going to be so pissed. We're trying to pimp these new HBO announcements. We're like, hey, check out this AMC shit.
Hey, if they wanted to not be pissed, they could give me Succession faster. No,
Jesse's working on it. They're working on it.
I don't know that I'm excited for this because it feels very Dirty John to me to go into these sort of rip from the headlines, tabloidy, true crime things where a man is bilking women of money or murdering people, or women are murdering each other. But at the same time, like, I really, really respect the Texas Monthly's true crime stories. Like, there's enough there, I think, to be interesting. But at the same time, I have no faith that it's going to be more interesting and less exploitative with David E. Kelley at the helm. No shade on Leslie's direction. I'm sure it'll be very innovative and look very good. And I think this is an opportunity for Elizabeth Olsen to, I mean, yes, axe murderer, but also have a little fun. I don't know. The story has a bunch of adultery and betrayal and friendships. And I don't know, but also it might actually be better if it doesn't take itself too seriously, which is a terrible thing to say about a real
crime.
Life situation where someone was literally murdered by an axe. But at the same time, like, I don't know how you necessarily take this thing straight, considering one of the main characters is named Candy. At some point, we also should mention the HBO or the Hulu project entitled Candy, based on the same crime, which is supposedly going to star Elizabeth Moss. That was announced almost a year ago, and we haven't heard much about it since. But two competing projects, two competing Elizabeths, one woman named Candy. It's just a lot to kind of digest.
Yeah, there was a nice line in the press release from, let's see, who is this? Lionsgate Television head Kevin Biggs, where it started by saying, "We cannot imagine a more perfect artist to play the leading role of Candy than Elizabeth Olsen." And it's like, in my head, I can imagine him emphasizing Olsen at the end. just very fun. And then to your point, again, we don't know much about this other than the creators involved and the new cast, but the log line that was provided by HBO Max is not even a real sentence, which again adds to the flippant nature of it, but still, two church-going couples enjoying small-town family life in Texas until somebody picks up an axe. Like, when you end with until somebody picks up an axe, that to me says, like, maybe they won't take this too seriously. Maybe this will be a little bit
wilder. Is it because there's no verb? What makes that not a sentence?
Yeah, because
they're all independent clauses. The way that enjoying small-town family life in Texas.
Yeah, they're all clauses.
They were two church-going couples just enjoying small-town family life in Texas until somebody picked up an axe. That does a lot. I added only two words, and I think we got a full sentence, and it doesn't change the meaning that much. And I think it's actually more ominous until somebody picked up an axe. Libby, you mentioned that there's another project called Candy, supposedly starring Elizabeth Moss, that is yet... No news has come out since December 2020, but I can tell
friend
you...
Friend of the pod,
Elizabeth Moss, yes. How could I forget? How close is too close? He asked once.
It's the best podcast.
So this past Wednesday... Season 4 of The Handmaid's Tale debuted on Hulu. As I mentioned up top, the fourth episode will air yesterday, if you are listening to this in the future.
My favorite part about this sentence is, one, yes, it's dependent on you listening to this pod as soon as it comes out. Two, technically it doesn't air at all. It just appears on a streaming thing, which is...
It drops. Just drops. But I did want to get your guys' thoughts on season 4 of Handmaid's Tale. Ben, I know you watched the series. Libby, you're in the process of watching. I am watching like a rube as the episodes drop, so I have not seen in advance. I only saw the first three. We know there's a fifth season on the books, and as Libby might attest to, there is a second book that Margaret Atwood wrote that may or may not factor into how these next two seasons of Handmaids play out. But Ben, why don't we get started by you talking a little bit about season 4, your thoughts. We'll try to stay pretty spoiler free. But obviously, if you haven't watched the first three seasons yet, don't stop listening now.
I believe when I submitted my review for season 4 of The Handmaid's Tale, I decried that I was a hypocrite and a horrible person, and you should just send me off to the wilderness to die. Because the main point of my review is that it takes about 5 to 6 episodes for season 4 of this very dark and heavy prestige drama to get good. And you should do it. You should just... you know, eat up all that extra fat, sift through it, and make your way to the gold mine. And that's pretty much the opposite of what I argue with everything. I usually am very harsh on shows that don't make efficient use of their time and plotting. Libby's giving me a look.
Is this because of the Cubs hat?
No, that's actually not where... it gets good. That's
I know, the last... but I just like your generosity. Did that spur any more generosity?
No, at that point I was still really angry. And it was a big question because there's so much in that episode, which we can't talk about yet, that seems like it was made specifically to court at least one critic in this group.
Literally you.
Yep.
And maybe me.
I don't think it worked. I really don't. I don't love that episode as much as I should, and as much as I do love seeing Elizabeth Moss in character wearing a Cubs hat, spoiler, that's coming, it's great. But no, I mean, the thing about The Handmaid's Tale for the last at least couple seasons for me is that it doesn't really earn most of the time its tortured gravitas, porn. I guess. Like, I struggled with the show as somebody who normally really overly enjoys sad prestige dramas. I struggled with this one nevertheless, and it was usually because it either felt repetitive or redundant or stretched out in some fashion. And the first 5 episodes of the new season absolutely do that. And then it takes a very interesting turn that is partially set up in that premiere episode, which is, I mean, maybe we can talk about a little bit. But no, I think it's one of those frustrating things. I think if you've invested the time in the show already, I think you need to kind of see it through. If you've made it this far, then I think it is, you know, it's a show for you. Like, you can do it. You'll be fine. And if you haven't, if you've drifted from the wagon, I don't know if it's earned, like, hey, you have to absolutely get back on board and watch this now. But it's creeping a lot closer toward that area. And then, yeah, how this season ends, considering they've already greenlit season 5, I think will tell us a lot about whether or not what changes in episodes 6, 7, and 8 are going to be sustainable enough to keep the show on a good momentum and kind of a steadier pace than what had come before. So,
Libby, we were talking a little bit earlier about the fact that there is going to be a 5th season. We already know this. And we teased the fact that Margaret Atwood wrote the sequel to The Handmaid's Tale, The Testaments. I guess from your perspective, how do you sort of see this blooming out? Neither Ben or I have read the book, so we don't have a good sense. But, like, do you see it as being a continuation or sort of more of a Game of Thrones prequel or, like, sequel scenario where it's like, it's the world?
It's, okay, let me start with what I once knew. I had heard once upon a time from someone that the rough plan was to see The Handmaid's Tale run for 5 seasons and then have The Testaments begin and run for 5 seasons. Like, that was many moons ago. Like, I have no idea if that was still the rough plan. I don't know how that changes with Hulu, with the continued success of Handmaid's Tale. But if what Ben is saying is accurate, that we're actually finally seeing some motion in the back half of the season towards something else, maybe an end game, then who can say, honestly? But for a show that has felt a little bit like it's been running in place for a couple seasons, then it does make sense that significant movement might mean that we're going somewhere finally. As for The Testaments, it is not just a, hey, let's go hang out with the Targaryens, you know, 300 years before anyone we cared about lived. This is much more a direct sequel.
Characters crossover.
Yes, there are characters who are currently in the series who appear in large roles in The Testaments. There are characters in the series who play smaller roles, who show up in The Testaments playing large roles. And I think the most important thing to keep in mind is that Margaret Atwood has always been very involved with The Handmaid's Tale and Hulu. She and Bruce Miller get on famously. Like, she's not breaking story there, but I think it's even a step beyond what George R. R. Martin does with Game of Thrones. Like, I don't think Bruce Miller would wander so far afield that they couldn't pick up with The Testaments where The Handmaid's Tale left out. Not necessarily directly. It's not necessarily like The Handmaid's Tale is going to end and then The Testaments will begin right where we left off. That would be pointless. But it is the same universe. It does have several of the same characters. And we are dealing with the same problems. We are dealing with this same
world.
Universe,
yeah, the world.
The same regime. 15, 20 years down the road.
I will say that the sound of The Testaments, without getting into spoilers, I think, is exciting to me, because the one thing, and I've talked to Ben about this while watching the season, is like, the one thing I'm always most interested about in The Handmaid's Tale is the world. No offense to June's story, which is obviously the center of the series, but I want to see, and I might see, you know, what does the front line look like in Chicago? Like, where are they fighting? Who is fighting who? Like, I want a map. I want to know, like, What are the politics of Canada aiding and abetting, you know, U.S. expatriates from Gilead when they share a border? Like, it's probably banal and stupid shit, but, like, I would love to see more of that reflected in the show. And I think it's tough to balance those two things at times.
Well, this goes back to our Shin Godzilla arguments, right? Like, there is something to be said about the weird bureaucracy that must be playing out in these, like, apocalyptic scenarios.
Yeah.
And one thing I think is super interesting that you said that, Leo, is that Hulu and The Handmaid's Tales, Twitter has been very big on, like, you entering your zip code and finding out where you would be in the United States, like, if there was fighting where you were, like, who has control over that territory. So they are, I think they have a sense now that they are sending it out to beyond just Gilead, just the community where June was. But I think, yeah, I think if there is a failing of The Handmaid's Tale, not as a novel, but as a series of television, it is that it is so tied to this one woman's experience and this one woman's point of view. And they try and expand beyond that with varying degrees of success. And we see that a lot. We've seen that a lot with other shows, like 24. Every time I'm like, how is June still alive? I feel like I should probably have been asking that every season of 24 as well with Jack Bauer, but also the patriarchy. but yeah, I'm
excited. She's alive because the show needs her to be alive.
I know, it's such an unsatisfying answer, and it's the only one they'll ever give me.
I will say that it has seemed to me like there are enough perspectives within Gilead and outside Gilead for the show to sustain without June. And I do feel like it struggled to give us good reasons how June has survived. I think the first three episodes of this season in particular are one of those things where it's like, no fucking way. That's just an insane thing. Like, it's just insane. But setting that aside.
They so clearly want me to stop asking that question, and yet they refuse to stop doing things that make me ask that question. Sorry for cutting you off, but it's very upsetting, Ben.
I would just be like, if I were in Gilead, if I were like some normal doofus in Gilead who isn't like a commander, I'd be like, how does this girl keep getting away? What's wrong with our leaders?
How is there not a bounty on her head for everyone?
What is wrong?
Yeah, it's like, I am aware of a handmaid's name, like, for this long? How is that possible? We kill them all the time. It's brutal and terrible.
Trains, apparently. Sorry, go, Ben. I swear to God, I'll shut up.
No, you're fine. If we accept the idea that The Handmaid's Tale is June's story, then my question becomes one that's like a how creative blends with a business model for introducing the Testaments. Because if we accept the idea that The Handmaid's Tale is June's story and she needs to have an ending before we can move on to the next phase of the story, like before the Testaments can start its run or be the sequel series or pick up, you know, however many years later. I guess my question is, does Hulu run the risk of never getting anyone back in this world? I have seen such a split reaction to The Handmaid's Tale, especially this season after there was a long break between the third season and the fourth season, where people are either still completely addicted and we're waiting for it to drop and they're launching and they're watching it. They're up to date. They know exactly what I'm talking about. And they're correcting me as I make mistakes with names and places and scenarios. Or they're like, there is never in 1,000 years will I go back to that show. Like, that show is too dark. It's too grim. We've moved past it as a society, if you want to make that argument, or you've just moved past it because you need a different kind of television show, AKA you're on the Ted Lasso train and you just need stuff that feels good. My concern if I was Hulu would be that if we give The Handmaid's Tale an ending before we start the New Testaments, if we don't find a way to link those outside of the simple original sequel scenario, that no one's going to watch this next show. Like, that no one's going to be like, I want to watch another version of this that isn't focused on Elizabeth Moss in all of her glory, and is still as, like, grim and dour and hard as The Handmaid's Tale has been. Like, I feel like this is one of those universe questions where we see this all over TV and movies. Everybody's trying to create a universe. And as appealing as it is, like in Leo's scenario, for like me as well, wanting to see the different corners of Gilead and kind of the map of what's going on and understanding the geopolitics of everything there. I don't know if that's going to be enough for the average viewer to reinvest in this show a second time once they've seen an ending. So I'm just, that's my question to the panel as two people who are pretty close tracking the show.
To borrow a poker phrase, I'm pot committed. Like I've spent this much, I've spent this much time with the show. To abandon it now feels like it'd be a disservice to me in a weird way.
Well, I guess that's the question though. It's not, I guess this doesn't really work with the poker analogy, but if in that scenario you're pot committed, they gave you a chance to just take your money back and call it a day, would you do it? Because if they give us an ending for The Handmaid's Tale, then you're done with that show. You don't have to start a new one. Like, you're not committed yet to the next thing.
I guess it depends on what the new one is. It depends on that first episode of the new one. Like, who are the characters I'm getting to see more of? How far in the future are we? Like, what are the changed dynamics of the world in this you know, sequel? Is there still Gilead? Is Gilead weakened? Is it stronger somehow? Has it expanded? Is there a world where they are, you know, like a Roman Empire and they've somehow grown? We don't know what the end of The Handmaid's Tale brings. I haven't read either book. I don't read. like there's a world
killing me here.
There's a world where Gilead could expand like the Roman Empire.
The religious
Empire,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
The sun never set on Gilead, you know what I mean?
Basically. let me phrase it like this, because it definitely depends on how Hulu sells it, because you can't depend on anyone having read the original book, much less the sequel. To me, The Handmaid's Tale and The Testaments are the last two books of a trilogy. We never get a very clear, we don't have a prequel for Handmaid's Tale that tells us exactly how Gilead came to be. We see shadows of it. We see implications. I'd love to get a history book that detailed that time. So then if you assume that The Handmaid's Tale is that center where we're in the heart of it, we kind of see the mechanics of how things are going from the lower class. What I will say is then, that what they are offering in the Testaments is the final chapters of this trilogy. So if you want to stop after Two Towers, that's fine. Like, you can do that. But the Testaments is your Return of the King.
Do people think of it like that? I've never heard this before. I've always heard of it as one and two. So it's more like they're continuing rather than we're ending.
But that doesn't make sense to me.
They should absolutely sell it that way.
Someone should write a prequel.
I guess it's a question of if people buy it. Like, I mean, especially in today's culture of everything just continues, I think it's much easier for an audience to very skeptically look at this and just be like, well, they're just extending it. Like, they're just making this run longer because they can. And I think promising an ending, especially for a series, assuming this isn't a limited series, The Testament, assuming it's an ongoing series, is already kind of a big ask for something that's that long. But anyway, I do not have a firm answer on anything here. This is definitely just skepticism and speculation without seeing the ending of The Handmaid's Tale or knowing exactly where it's going to go. I still haven't seen the last two episodes of even this season, let alone season 5. It just does. When I reached the end of episode 8, I think I told Leo this already, it felt like this was either going to end immediately, like in the next two episodes, which obviously isn't the case, so it's going to end in a season, or it's going to go for another 5 years. Like, it's just going to go, like, they could just expand. And I was curious if The Testaments was that expansion, I guess.
I think The Testaments is Return of the King.
God, this makes it such a tricky, like such a tricky thing for like a tricky line for them to walk, because you need The Handmaid's Tale to end well enough that people are satisfied, and like this show that has already been, you know, coronated as best drama series and, you know, launched into the you know, prestige TV stratosphere, you know, it needs a proper ending. But it's almost like if it's too good, if it's too satisfying, they won't feel that pressure to be like, no, I do need the ending that the Testaments is going to provide. I do need to get there again.
I disagree. I see what you're saying. I disagree with that because, as we've learned from literally every show in human existence, if you are a fan of something, you will always want more, no matter how much you shouldn't want more.
Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul.
That's
yeah.
true.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not even that, but like then the movie. Like, oh, we have to do a movie. Oh, we need a Downton movie. Like, oh, we need a second Downton movie. Like, it's people just want more, whether it's good for them or not.
Cheers, Frasier. People want more shows.
Shut up, you.
Wings, cheers, Frasier. Don't forget Wings.
Can't forget the Wings. The new class. Not as good.
So I... yeah, it's tough. I think they do have a really difficult line to walk. I think a big help would be not having Bruce Miller showrun the Testaments. I think making it a different show would go a really long way. Maybe getting a woman or a woman of color to showrun that show. I think if you completely break with the stylistic tone that the Handmaid's Tale has set, there are plenty of ways to draw an audience in. Like, oh, you're familiar with this world, let's jump ahead and see how that closed system is playing out in a new way. It's like when we always wanted anthology seasons to have a different director or showrunner every year, or how I really wished the Harry Potter movies had a different director to bring like their style to each individual entry. There's a lot of opportunity here. I think that there's a very high ceiling for success, but I think that you're absolutely right that people might get to the end of June's story, and because they've spent at least five years with June, they're just like, that's a lot of Gilead. Like, I'm done. Like, I think I'm done.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's time for the Leo's Murder Power Rankings. It's that time. No spoilers or spoilers. No spoiler
spoilers. We got a spoiler.
Okay. So this past Sunday was the third episode of Mayor of Easttown. I have the summary here, just in case you're unfamiliar. As Mayor and Colin parse new physical evidence, phone records lead to an unlikely suspect. After lashing out at Helen about a possible custody fight over Drew, Mayor receives some unprompted advice from Richard on how to move forward with Carrie. Later, Kenny and Mayor face the consequences of their misguided attempts to protect their families.
Yeah, some shit went down.
Yeah.
Mayor tried something, it didn't go well.
Mayor, for how good she is at, like, I think this episode did a lot of, like, Mayor's an amazing cop. Mayor might be the stupidest person on the planet.
Well, somehow, she's struggling with her grief, Leo.
Somehow simultaneously found the bullet, like... oh, look at this ricochet. Look, there's the bullet. I found it in spite of the top county dogs. Could not find this bullet or this gunpowder. But also, I'm not going to remove the little alien the little alien marking on the drugs so that you can't.
Yeah. This is what happens. Like, she's clearly a good cop. She knows what she's doing. But when you're struggling with grief and hurt and you're angry and you've got all of these things clouding your judgment, alcoholism definitely played a part in that, not taking the labels off.
I think Colin might have mistakes. A problem.
You make mistakes.
He might have more of a problem than Mayor. Evan Peters doing a hell of a drunk acting there.
I really love him
in this. I can't help it.
He's drunk and he's doing the Delco accent. Really?
Yeah, that's a pretty fucking high bar.
That's a lot of plates to be spinning at once. A lot of spinning plates there.
And being normal.
I don't disagree.
And being normal.
You got to give the people what they want. He might be in trouble. We might need to worry about him. But is he a murderer?
We're going to find out here in a second. Just to recap, last week's murder ranking saw Colin Zabel was 5, Frank Sheehan was 4, Deacon Mark Burton was 3, the cousin of the dad of the girl who was murdered, a.k.a. a.k.a. Billy, was 2, and then Richard Ryan, Guy Pearce's character, was number 1. That was just me going with my gut. He's too big a name to not be the murderer.
Rude.
But here are this week's murder rankings. In the 5 spot, I'm going with Faye. She's making a lot of faces at Frank.
Fuck's Faye.
Isn't that his fiance?
Yeah.
Like when that whole shouting match is happening where she accuses her ex-husband of sleeping with a teenager, it seems like Faye knows something. And then she's giving both him the silent treatment and Mare the silent treatment. And though we now have an alibi for Frank that he sang Billy Joel and passed out in a chair, where was Faye? What was Faye up to? Number 4? I've dropped Richard Ryan. Guy Pearce is now 4 on the... He fell 3 spots to 4.
Disappointing showing.
Yeah, he didn't do much this episode, and he actually gave good advice. He gave good advice. And he flirted with Jean Smart. She's resting on the banister.
Spoiler. Jean Smart broke a hip in that scene.
Yep. Whoa. Stay tuned for award.
Broke a rib.
Stay tuned for award spotlight to see the rest of that story. Luckily, as she said, she was wearing padding to make the character seem a little bigger, so she didn't break her hip or anything else in her body. Broke a rib.
She did say she snapped a rib in half.
Yeah. 3. Despite him being very drunk and very cool, I'm sticking with Colin Zabel. There's something there. I don't think he's that good a cop. I think so. How do you solve this other case? The way he said, "Oh, I knew there was a hole in this person's timeline. He worked at this thing, and then we found the body." Okay, you could have put the body where he worked because you knew where he worked. Fishy. 2. I'm borrowing this from my wife. What's up with Siobhan? She's making faces left and right, and she was one of the last people to be with Aaron.
She's a lesbian, so, you know, suspicious.
Yeah. Lesbians are just suspicious. And yeah, she was one of the last people to be seen with Aaron when she was alive. And then, of course, this episode really shined a spotlight on Deacon Mark Burton.
He's a priest. Yeah. Also suspicious.
Hello.
I think my juice is here.
Juice.
So, number 1 with the bullet, Deacon Mark Burton. Obviously, like Libby said, priest.
Can't trust him.
Doing some very suspicious things, like throwing her bike into the river.
As one does.
He has her bicycle.
Very suspicious.
He's also the last person to speak to her on the phone, last phone record. Then he
As one does.
Then he ducks the cops when they come back for a second line of questioning, peeking out.
Not very priest-like.
Also, when Mayor's cousin asks him how the conversation went, he just kind of went okay and then runs away very quickly. I will say, as a viewer of these kinds of shows, it feels too early for that hot a spotlight to be on our killer. Unless the show is just about the rest of it.
Yeah.
Which might be the case.
They solve it next episode.
They solve it. Mare should not be on the case.
This all plays out.
The biggest twist of Mare of Easttown is that they solve the murder in episode 4, and then the last 3 episodes are just about Mare like getting her shit together. It's like, listen, we got the case. We set all that aside, and let's just focus on Mare.
They bring in Marie Kondo. Like it's a whole like inspirational sort of eat, pray, love vibe for the back half.
Does it spark joy? Which was referenced in yesterday's episode of Breeders, the best comedy on television right now.
Oh. Well, Hacks is coming.
Right now is what I said. I used the phrase right now.
No, I heard you, and I said Hacks is coming.
I said right now.
I hate you. I said I hate you.
I said right now. And also, we'll see. We'll see what Hacks is like. Millions of Screens is a production of the Penske Media Corporation. IndieWire, our theme music features excerpts of the classic YouTube video Bjork Talking About TV and Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory. Our editor-in-chief is Anna Harris-Brightson, our publisher is James Israel, and our executive editor is Anne Donahue. This week's episode is brought to you by some of our favorite sequels in trilogies. The Godfather Part 2, a given. I mentioned it earlier on the pod. The Empire Strikes Back definitely works.
It's the best because it's the coldest.
The colder the movie, the better the movie. Evil Dead 2? Do we have fans?
Definitely better than Evil Dead 1.
Same.
And then this episode very specifically is brought to you by The Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. And if
the
you
Hobbit
just want
2, Electric Boogaloo.
If you just want to stop at The Two Towers, you can.
If you want.
You're the one who made that point, Libby.
I mean, the heavy implication
I
is that
yeah.
Why would you? No, like, why would you just go this far and be like?
I think Libby was arguing more that people want to watch Return of the King, so then they'll want to watch The Testaments.
Did you just completely?
I thought you were saying you could just watch The Two Towers.
Leo is attached to The Two Towers. He's like, that movie is fucking great. You're right.
It is.
We can end it there. We can end it there, then we don't have 16 endings.
Oh my god.
It ends early. We eliminate all those problems.
It's the best of the three movies. Wait, do you not agree that it's the best of the three Lord of the Rings movies? Oh, it's the best of the three movies.
What the fuck, Leo? Helm's Deep just completely missed my point.
Like, Helm's Deep, baby.
I mean, Helm's Deep's great, but Fellowship of the Ring all the way.
I honestly haven't seen them in a decade, so I'll rewatch them tonight and I'll let you know.
rewatch 8 hours of movie tonight. You can find us on Twitter at A Million Screens and Midwest Spitfire at Ben T. Travers and at Leo Andrew Garcia. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, so leave a review and let us know what you think. This is Ben, Libby, and Leo. Remind you, as always, that you shouldn't let poets lie to you.
You shouldn't let poets lie to you.
Ain't nothing wrong with a couple of cold brews and a cool podcast.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.